Forecasting climate is challenging at the best of times, let alone in autumn. The Bureau of Meteorology issues fortnightly climate driver updates, and with many farmers across the southern region having commenced a dry seeding program, while eagerly awaiting rain, it's crucial to stay informed and prepared. Welcome to our second Better Frost Decisions podcast for 24, where we unravel the mysteries of climate drivers to empower farmers with better insights and decisions for their agricultural ventures. Hi, I'm Paige Cross, Project Manager for Mallee Sustainable Farming. Forecasting the seasonal climate can make even the wisest person nervous, but our guest today is well placed to provide his thoughts on the seasonal outlook. I'm joined today with Peter Heyman. Peter is the Principal Scientist, Climate Applications at the South Australian Research and Development Institute of the Department of Primary Industries and Regions. Peter works to identify climate risks to agriculture and is a long-term friend to Mallee Sustainable Farming. Peter is also actively involved with the National Risk Management Initiative known as RiskWise. Peter, the Bureau of Meteorology have just released their climate driver update with the El Nino Southern Oscillation Index currently neutral. Can you please explain what this is indicating for autumn in southern Australia?
Autumn is a tricky month, and you have to say that forecasting climate at any time scale is difficult. So I think most farmers would acknowledge we've got very good weather forecasts for the next 4 to 7 days, and we have information about the coming season, but it's probabilistic, and we get fairly small shifts in the probabilities, and we're often surprised as what happens compared to what we thought might happen based on a climate driver or something. So we have some information there, but it's fairly low. Now, all of that is true for winter, spring rainfall, which is when the forecasts are probably the best. For autumn, it's just really difficult. Graham Anderson from DPI has the nice analogy that early in the season, people have all different theories about what's going to happen, but things firm up towards August, September, and late July sort of thing, you get more information. And in a similar way with El Nino, Indian Ocean Dipole, and so on, these are indicators which we tend to get more information as we move through the season to winter for the coming spring. Well, what we're really saying is that we've got to be cautious how we read things in autumn. There's a sort of a watching brief for that. That said, most people who are looking at the Bureau's models for autumn, and it's fairly dry, isn't it, for much of southern Australia. Now, there's the systems coming through in South Australia where we are. We seem to be missing those systems. When you look out for the next 10 days, you know, for the weather forecast, there's nothing there to see. So here we are, the start of May, where we're starting to really, I guess, want things to be happening in the next couple of weeks, don't we?
Absolutely, Peter, you're right. It is incredibly dry. And talking to somebody in Hamilton in Western Victoria, they are also starting to look for rain. And we're talking about how the weather does seem to have changed. It seems to be that big high that's stuck in the middle of the bite, that if that would just move, then maybe that would open up some opportunities as well. We're making decisions now, and we're in autumn, as you correctly stated. People are either seeding at the moment or are thinking about seeding. What's your recommendation for people making decisions now, recognizing that our forecasting could still move a lot?
We have to acknowledge that each rain and anset day is wonderful and very rare. So the autumn break often happens much later than that. And experienced farmers and agronomists will look over their data and give you that. MSF ran that really interesting survey with a lot of their clients on their sowing. And it just seems that the wise experience is because you need to finish at a certain date, you need to start early and start dry. And people have set up operations to do that. They're very good at doing that in terms of weed control and everything else. So they're set up to do that. It's been one of the real innovations over time that's led to these ongoing productivity, good summer weed control and timely sowing. That's becoming increasingly standard practice. And you could see that a lot of people were doing that and were comfortable with that. Obviously, they would like to have had that rain, but they're still going ahead and doing that. And I think as they point out, is that leaving machinery and plant in the shed is very expensive. There may be some marginal paddocks and some area and so on, but that's what they're set up to do. It would be wonderful if we had really reliable forecasts in autumn that could tell you exactly what the spring was going to be. But I think we just have to be really cautious of anyone promising that. What we do have is a system that gives us some more emerging information through the season. And sometimes we still need to really work on what we have, which is the stored soil water that some people have and the understanding of that and the need to start these large programs on time. Because one thing we are sure is that spring will always come in the Mallee, and these areas, spring will always come in harsher. It's very rare to get a long, wet spring. It might be strange for a climate person to be saying this, but I think we have to be really cautious about what we try and say about spring at this time.
Absolutely. That's completely reasonable, Peter. We know that things do move and change. Is the neutral, is that pretty much saying that it's 50-50? Is that what neutral means?
So what's happening in the Pacific Ocean is now in neutral, and people will be aware, they're following this, that some models, not the Bureau's model, but some other global climate models that the Bureau monitors on their website, which gives us a really nice outlook of the different models. Some of those models have gone for La Nina in the coming year. We're cautious to read too much into that and cautious about some of the headlines that sort of guarantee a La Nina in the coming year. So we're saying that the oceans are very warm, which makes things tricky, is what the Bureau's in terms of how this transition is happening and so on. But, and also the Bureau's website is very clear that this time of year, well, what it's saying is watch this at this point in time. Don't go and say, well, it's dry now, I'm guaranteed a good spring. That would be really unwise on this basis. At the same time, the way our brains work is when it's dry, we just imagine it being dry forever. The wise survey responses that we got through MSF was the seeding time of year is just pretty rule-based. You just have to go and do it. If you're running a large grain farm at this time of year, it's seeding time and you go and do that.
We know that it will rain. We do know that at some point in time, it will rain.
Yes, that's why we will know how much that you went.
When, we don't how know, much.
But we do know that. And I think it's also the case, and I think even though, like, we keep being very aware of that farmers are very hard markers on this stuff, but most would acknowledge that the short-term forecasts have got a lot better. And so there's that information. Now, obviously, there's cases where that gets missed and so on, but on the whole, the short-term information is good. And so the fact that the short-term forecasts are giving such a dire outlook for the next 10 days, obviously people are watching that very closely. They're watching systems that sort of come and disappear on that further bit. And they're very sympathetic to the stress that must happen when people are watching that and seeing that it continues to stay dry. And then the outlook, much of southern Australia is quite dry for May, shifting in the outlook as to a more neutral outlook in June from the Bureau's access model. Yeah.
The access to data now that farmers have, either at an individual farm level, whether it's through BOM, through other ag tech, hasn't that just made such a difference to help people make decisions?
I think this is an interest, but a risk-wise, it's this behavioural science thing and the mind tricks we have of just when it's dry around us, how that's so loud in our head. It's just really hard to think about other things. And that's why I think groups like MSF, where people get together and talk and there's that experience and that multi-generational aspect of farming, is really important, isn't it? It's dry in early May. Well, that's actually not that unusual if you look at the statistics, and it's certainly in people's experience and so on. There have been plenty of good years when it's been pretty ordinary in early May, and then things have turned good. But in some ways, where uncertainty presents real problems is when there's a difficult decision. But it is still interesting to me that even when we've had very late starts, say the area of canola across southern Australia doesn't seem to drop that dramatically. So a lot of people are saying that this isn't really a negotiable decision. This paddock's marked for this, I'm going to do it, sort of thing. Obviously, if nothing happens well into June, there's a problem, but people are still going ahead. And all of that makes good sense.
Absolutely, Peter, you're right. And so many people have got their paddocks planned out for the next 3 to 5 years. They know what they're looking for. It's about making those strategic decisions, whether it is for weed control, whether it's for management, whether you're targeting a certain crop or a certain commodity. Just circling back, Peter, back to the climate drivers update. The Indian Ocean Dipole, it's currently neutral and it's in its seventh week above the positive IOD threshold. If this continues to remain positive, what could this mean for our farmers across the southern region?
This is really interesting. We're getting a bit nerdy about climate here and so on, which is always good. What normally happens is that a La Nina, which is what gives us the wet phase, is actually associated with a negative IOD. So often our really wet years are where we have a La Nina and a negative IOD. It's unusual to have a discussion about a La Nina and a positive IOD. That's unusual. It's not unprecedented, but it's unusual. Normally, what we see is that the El Nino happens with a positive IOD and a La Nina happens with a negative IOD. So they reinforce each other, if you like. So it is unusual that in one sense, we're talking about a sort of brake and accelerator at the same time. This discussion of a positive IOD is, yikes, we could be hit with drier spring. Talk about a La Nina, which is in the more international press than in the Bureau and so on, it is talk about a wetter spring. So that the worst thing to assume is that we'll get neutral, that the two will cancel each other out. What we're saying is that really is we need to wait and see what's happening here. It's my understanding from climate scientists, and I'm not a climate scientist, I'm an agricultural scientist. My understanding from climate scientists is that Graham Anderson's wise point about from Vic DPI, Graham's El Nino, La Nina discussion being like your favorite footy team, wait until July, August, September. That's even truer for IOD. So our ability to make early predictions about what IOD is going to be happening in spring is even less reliable than the El Nino, La Nina discussion. These are good reasons for watching briefs. The Bureau updates their climate driver page at the beginning and the middle of the month. On that climate driver page, what the Bureau says is what you should be looking at is the seasonal forecast, because that's a dynamic forecast that takes into account all of this. And it'd be interesting to watch how that forecast and how the forecast starts swinging for winter, spring at this stage. This discussion about how much should we just look at the Bureau's forecast maps and how much should we be worrying about climate drivers is an interesting question. So at one end, people say, I mean, there's a view that says just the forecast has everything captured in it, and that's important. And it's a much more sophisticated model that captures everything. I'm still sympathetic to growers and agronomists who want to get confidence in those maps based on what's happening with their understanding of the climate drivers. I do that myself, and I think that's reasonable. The problem, and this is a warning for myself as well, is that once you've done that, you then can get into this causal thinking, which is, again, a risk-wise sort of, you know, this behavioral science, how our brains work, is that as soon as I sort of see that there's an IOD there and I know that a positive IOD is bad for us, therefore I know it's got to be dry. Well, the problem is that a positive IOD changes the odds a bit. It doesn't guarantee these things. There have been 25 El Niños in the last 100 years, and they haven't all been horrendously hot, dry summers. There have been quite wet summers sometimes with El Niño. The chance of a drier summer increases. We're just not good intuitive statisticians. There are some people who are. I'm certainly not. And I think I'm normal in that regard, where most of us just tend to latch on to something and think, oh, well, that's what I think will happen into the future, rather than considering the wider range of futures.
Isn't that so true, Peter, where we look for signs or we look for indicators that validate the decision that we want to make ourselves? And we go, all right, I want to go sowing. I feel like I should go sowing, but I just need an indicator to say, yep, you're making the right decision and it'll all be okay. Whereas, and to your point before about the strength of farming systems groups is bringing groups of farmers together to often hear from people like yourself, but it's also that networking side of things that happen after the presentations where you do come together and you can get access to really great conversations and just that networking and that peer-to-peer support as well. And that is, I think, a strength of a farming systems group.
Sure. The clear value of those are the breaks where people are talking to each other and the questions. And it's also really good to see that multi-generational aspect to it too, isn't it? You've got the more experienced farmers, but also the younger farmers with different ideas and learning from each other. And survey after survey shows that a main source of how farmers learn is peer-to-peer, which makes a lot of sense. It's a pretty good rule of thumb is find someone who's the right person to imitate, then imitate some of what they're doing. It's something I try and do. So I guess pretty wise for most people to try and do that is find someone cleverer than you and try and work out what they're doing.
Absolutely, Peter, you're right. Circling back a little bit, quite a few of farmers have started dry sowing, and there is a real range of soil moisture across the GRDC southern region. As we start that 2024 season, what are some of the frost-based decisions farmers and advisors will be considering?
From a frost perspective, so we've just talked about climate drivers. It's important to acknowledge that climate drivers do have an influence on the number of frosts. But I'm going to go on to say that influence isn't very strong, and it would have to be very strong to change a decision. I think the good practice of zoning that Mick Faulkner and others talk about, and it's been around for a long time really, is this idea of understanding the landscape and the frostier parts of the landscape. And you can see that farmers have done that and in some cases allocated some paddocks for just hay production and in other areas just for livestock and so on. I think the idea of very late sowing to avoid frost is increasingly seen as not wise because if you put yourself into extreme heat risk, and most importantly, you put yourself into drought risk, but you can get some very late frost, and farmers tend to be pretty philosophical about these late October frosts and so on that do some real damage at times. You can't really avoid them. So I think landscape is the one. Going back to this discussion on climate drivers, I think it's worthwhile research to have understood this. However, in the end, for something like frost, I would need a really good forecast to start moving things around because of frost.
That makes sense. Peter, traveling around South Australia, you have attended quite a few of our Mallee RiskWise events. What are some of the weather-related risks that have been raised by farmers?
The big concern has to be spring rainfall. It's the business end of the season where so much is made up. So that spring rainfall and what's happening with that. And that just dominates things so much. With that goes these heat events. So these hot northerlies that we get and what that does to crops and so on. And the concern about that and cutting off the season with that. Frost is obviously very location and landscape specific. So some people, that's a very big issue that they're dealing with all the time, and some people it's an occasional sort of issue that hits them. As I think recent seasons have highlighted that.
And I think that's a really great place to end, Peter, where some things to think about, our take-home messages are, it is hard to forecast frost and we need to be very careful about trying to forecast frost, but what we can do and what people have been doing is look at zones, look at making those management-based decisions, look at the business-based decisions, understanding climate drivers.
Can I just add, seasonal forecasts are really tricky for frost, but the short term, you know, a week ahead and this sort of information with the Bureau is very good, I think, about cold and ice. Now, whether that will actually be a frost always, but that shorter term aspect, I think, is very good. And it's good warning for people who are looking at options of putting livestock in or hay, like keeping in mind what can happen.
And I'd like to thank you, Peter, for being here today and for sharing your expertise in looking at making risk-based decisions. And I do thank you for your time today.
That's no trouble for me. Bye.
As we conclude this episode, I'm reminded of the invaluable insights shared today by our guest, Peter Heyman, unravelling the complexities of climate drivers to empower farmers and advisors in navigating weather-related risks. Join us next time for more enriching discussions as we continue our journey towards better frost decisions. I'd also like to acknowledge the GRDC as part of the project, applying current knowledge to inform grower decision-making to mitigate the impact of frost now and into the future. For more information about this project, please visit the GRDC or Mallee Sustainable Farming websites. Thanks for joining us.